coming to you from my apartment that doubles as a podcast recording studio. This is What Should I Do With My Life with Steph Horowitz. I'm Steph Horowitz. Thanks for joining me. This podcast is about how none of us know what we're doing. None of us have it figured out. No matter if you seem like you have it all together, you really don't, so be honest. We're going to talk about real stories from real people, their experiences, how they're figuring it out. From career pivots to being in the same industry for 40 years, we're going to hash this thing out so we can all find more meaning and passion in our work and day-to-days. Hi, everyone. It's been a while, as you know, so it's nice to be here with a fresh new conversation with an awesome guest. Just a heads up, I was thinking and I'm still thinking about dabbling with some kind of family miniseries. My family has multiple educators, a psychologist, a rabbi, a lawyer, an actor, a journalist, a sign language interpreter, an interior decorator, a fundraiser, a publisher. And this is just my immediate family and their spouses. So we definitely have a lot of good stories and life experience there. It feels like that would be covering hundreds of people, but it's really only a handful. So I will keep you posted on how I move forward with that. But today's guest is absolutely indeed my family. I'm very excited to introduce you to Sherry Horowitz, my sister-in-law. She's married to my brother, Adam. Sherry is a high school teacher who has taught over 2,000 students over the past 12 years. She currently teaches English at Huron High School in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with a lot of passion, might I add. In this episode, Sherry talks about how she incorporates her love for acting in movies and her work, how she stays motivated and excited when teaching the same material. We go over some tricks of the trade for a more efficient teaching schedule and grading, and we talk about how being a teacher is a core part of her identity and something she can't just turn off. I had a ball talking to her. I've been wanting to get her on the pod since day one, so I'm very excited for you to meet her. And before we start, fun little game for you. Itai, my husband, does an extremely loud sneeze in the episode. I was unable to edit it out. If you can catch the sneeze, feel free to DM me with a timestamp and you just might win a prize. Anyways, I can't wait for this episode, so here's Sherry.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
What's up? What's going on?
Oh, not too much. I like your painting in the background.
Oh, thank you. This is my first interview in over 6 months, so I'm feeling rusty rue, but I know I have a great partner in crime to do it with, so I'm very excited to have you here, Sherry. My sister-in-law, we've known each other for a very long time. We're getting old.
Oh, I know. Don't remind me. The other day, I realized that I'm mid-30s and it was extremely depressing.
What made you realize that?
I was having lunch with my friend Alex and I was telling him that one of my students, I think I might've told you, this is like a few months ago. He was like, oh, do you have your master's degree? And I was like, yeah, I do actually. And I was like, I think I got it probably like 7 or 8 years ago. And he was like, oh, when you were 36. And I was like, what? I'm not even now. And Alex is like, well, you're almost 36. And I was like, no, I was like, and then I was like, yeah, I am going to be 35 in August. And it was really depressing.
Oh man. Well,
not as depressing as my student thinking that I'm.
Yeah, like that's a bit worse, but we're just going to give them a slap on the wrist for that one, but no actual slaps because we don't do that in school. We're just going to dive in, Sherry. So in traditional What Should I Do With My Life fashion, of course, I want to know in one sentence, what do you do?
I am a high school English teacher.
Boom. She said it with confidence. She said it clearly. So as long as I knew you, that was your track and focus. So I'm curious, did you always know you wanted to be a teacher or was there a specific moment that made you realize I want to do this?
I was thinking about my path as a teacher. And when I was in kindergarten, they had us back at Green School Elementary. They had us write our own stories. And in the beginning, they would do a cute little about the author. And one of the questions they always asked was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And there's a story that I wrote in kindergarten, which was really quite good, about a lamb. And I wrote in the kindergarten book that I wanted to be a teacher. And so clearly it was something I wanted to do from a very, very, very young age. But then pretty much since I was, let's say, like 7 or 8 up until college, I actually wanted to be an actress. Mm. And I was really, really thinking that was something I was going to do. And that's then, awesome. I know, no one who knows me is surprised by this. And then I started to think, like, I don't think I could handle that. It's a very competitive industry, and I don't have a lot of quote unquote talent as an actor. I'm not good. And then for about 2 or 3 years, I was like, you know what? I love movies. I think I want to be a film critic. And I actually, when I went to college, thought about majoring in journalism. Yep. And I actually wrote for the Michigan Daily because I went to University of Michigan. And I did film critics. I was a writer on the Michigan Daily for all 4 years of college. But, and this is turning into a bit of a long story, but I'm almost done with it. So when I was a sophomore in college, I started to realize, you know what, maybe also the journalism industry isn't what I want to go into. And I thought about teaching again. And I ended up applying for the School of Ed, and I got in. And it was one of those things, really, this is going to sound really cheesy, but the second I started student teaching and I was in a classroom, I was like, this is what I am meant to do. And this is what I love to do. And I haven't looked back since that point.
It's so funny you say all these things, because one of the thoughts I was thinking about that I had shared with you was, you know, you're passionate about movies and TV and film, like, and you were reviewing those movies at the Michigan Daily, and you were very active and also in writing and also in film. So I was very curious about those avenues for you. But in any case, it sounds like you pretty quickly realized, oh, this is what I meant to do. And this is where I want to be. So when you were student teaching, you were student teaching high school?
So yeah, I started out student teaching high school. I did do a little bit of middle school student teaching. And as fun as that was, that is not the age group that I really enjoyed the most. Middle schoolers are a little scary. They're fun, but like, yeah, for me, as soon as I went back to high school, I was like, no, this is the perfect age group for me.
Why? Why do you think that?
A lot of times, it's funny, I actually told one of my senior classes this year, I say, whenever I work with high schoolers, I either get two reactions. One reaction is someone who says like, oh, I could never, teenagers are so scary, they don't listen, this. Or I get the other way where they're like, oh, that must be really cool, and you get to hang out with them. And sometimes it's kind of in the middle. But for me, I love that you can interact with them. You can treat them like an adult, but they're still kind of kids. You can talk about deep things. You can talk about silly things. But it's funny because I used to have a box full of Play-Doh in my classroom. And whenever the students were behaving well or we had some extra time, I would say like, okay, a little bit of SEL self-care, like we're just going to play with Play-Doh. And they just went wild for it. And they loved it so much. And these were like juniors and seniors in high school who love that kind of stuff. And so it's really, in my opinion, it's like the best of both worlds. You get like the fun kid stuff, but you also can treat them like an adult and have really mature, deep conversations, and they can think really deeply about things. And I think that's why they are like my niche, if that makes sense.
Your sweet spot.
Exactly.
I think that makes a lot of sense, because knowing you, of course, as a mother, which is different than being a teacher, I see you with young children. I know, you know, you're good with young kids. And at the same time, working with high schoolers, when I look at you, it just kind of makes a lot of sense. I can see your students feeling like, Mrs. H, she's so cool, that they feel like they can relate to you. You're very relatable. You're very down to earth. But that doesn't mean you're not, you know, you're at the end of the day still an authority figure, a teacher and a friend. And it makes a lot of sense to me that they would confide in you and trust you and respect you, and you'd have fun like with your humor and your interests, kind of weaving that into what you do, which leads me a bit into some of the other stuff I wanted to ask you about. So first off, I'm curious to hear, what are you teaching today? And I also want to know, I know you've taught in the past psychology, English literature. I know you love Shakespeare and Jane Austen. So aside from what you teach today, what's your like number one subject or book to teach, or a top three? Because we're feeling generous today.
Ooh, top three. So first of all, so this coming year, I'm going to be teaching 9th grade English and AP literature. So, which is really interesting because you get like the 9th graders of all different skill sets. And then I get the seniors, and a lot of them are, you know, the upper level, like higher skill level, not all of them, but the upper level. And so it is like a really big swing, a really big shift throughout the day, which can be really interesting, sometimes very frustrating, but can be really interesting. And honestly, and I'm not just like tooting my own horn here, but in my mind, and I do think this is the reason why a lot of my students are very successful, is I treat them the same. Like I don't go into my 9th grade class being like, oh, I'm going to quote unquote, like dumb down the material, or I'm going to, you know, treat them like they can't do this. Like, obviously I'm not going to give them AP level work, but I'm also going to be like, no, I expect this from you. And like, you know, you're telling me that you can't do this, but I'm going to help you get there. And I'm going to treat you like you are essentially a high level student, even if you don't think that. And I did have a student a few years ago. It's a bit of a tangent, and then I'll come back. But I did have a student a few years ago who wrote me a really nice note at the end of the year. And this is a sophomore that I had. And he was like, no matter what grade I got, whether it was an A or whether it was an E, you always treated me the same and you always looked at me the same. And that really meant a lot to me. And I think about that a lot because kids really do pick up on the expectations you have, or like the respect you have for them, or like, you know, the vibe that you're giving out. And so, yeah, so that's what I'm teaching. And then when I think about my favorite things to teach, you did kind of mention it. I mean, this is, again, not a surprise to anyone who knows me, but the number one thing I like to teach is Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. When I learned that book, I got taught that book in high school in my AP English class, and I fell in love with it. And I remember very, very vividly that my whole class did. The way my teacher taught it was so fantastic. And I remember I had a lot of guy friends who were like, this book is just delightful. Like those are the actual words they use. Like they were like, this is amazing. They loved it. We love to talk about it. We went and saw the movie as like a class field trip. It was really exciting. I love, and this happens every year, that I have like tough guy students who are like football players who will come up to me and be like, I really love this book. Like, I'm really into this book. And I'm like, of course you are, because it's amazing. And also I think because they pick up on my enthusiasm for it. And so I love that. And I do love teaching Shakespeare because it's one of those things that it's very cliche. And I know that, but I think one of the reasons why I love teaching it is because so many kids go into it being like, I'm going to hate this and it's too hard and I can't figure it out. And to see them at the end of it, figuring it out and enjoying it and picking up on it and being like, this actually isn't so bad, is very, very rewarding for me. And I think like, this is kind of a cop out because it's not a specific thing. But lately, over the last 2 years, I've really tried to be diversifying my curriculum and adding in works from art, like authors that are more reflective of who my kids are. Like this year I had an African author because I had a lot of African students and they were so excited. Like one of them, when we picked up the book, she was like, is this an African book? And she just had this huge smile on her face. And it was just so nice because I was like, these students don't see themselves in what they read a lot in English class. So for me, that's kind of like a broad thing. But I also had a student this year who he read The Namesake in my class and he wrote this amazing essay. And I was like, this is the best essay you've written so far. And he was like, I really connected with this book because he could see himself in it. And he was like, it really meant a lot to me and I really loved it. And so that for me has been very exciting.
There's a lot of parts of the job and this career that seem to give you a lot of meaning. And I feel like we think of our teachers, we think of our role models. All of us have at least one teacher, I would hope, that has made a profound impact on our lives that we think back to, that something they taught us stuck with us, or how they made us feel. So it really is just a huge, huge responsibility. We know it's can be undervalued with the education system, pay, et cetera. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But I'm wondering, like, don't you feel a lot of pressure to kind of be incredibly impactful on your students? And how do you deal with that pressure? Because it really is an important job. You're kind of supposed to be, apparently,
a source of inspiration.
And which I am. I will.
Yes. Be. Yes, you are. Obviously you are. So isn't that a lot of pressure? Like, how do you deal with that?
It is actually a lot of pressure. And I think this is where wanting to be an actress really comes into play, because as we all know, teachers are humans and we have bad days. And there are certainly days where I don't want to be there, or I'm dealing with a lot personally. And the last thing I want to do is get up in front of a room and be like the center of attention and have everyone focus on me and have to be this. And there are certainly days where I think to myself about a story that Daniel Radcliffe said. This is a really random thing, but Daniel Radcliffe, who plays Harry Potter, he was on Broadway. This is now like 10
years. The horse one?
No, this is actually when he did do Equus, but when he was in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, uh-huh. the musical. And someone was interviewing him and they were like, what do you do if you're having a bad day? And he was like, I think to myself, somebody in the audience paid a lot of money for these tickets. And they kind of laughed at that. But I was like, he's so right. And I think about that when I go into teaching, that I'm like, and it's not the same thing. No one's paying money to see me yet. But yet. Even though I say this to my students all the time, when I give life advice, I always go like, write this one down. This one's for free. It's all free now. But I think to myself, like, my students could be having a really bad day. And it's almost like on me to be like a positive force and be enthusiastic. And I mean, it's maybe one of the top three things that I get told about myself by my students, that they love my enthusiasm, they love my positivity. And they'll say, like, even when I'm having a bad day, I enter the room and I immediately perk up because I know you're going to be in a good mood and you're going to be positive and you're going to be like enthusiastic. And that just helps to elevate the mood in the room. So it's a lot of me, not a lot, but it is me acting sometimes, because it's me being like, you know, Sherry, you just got to pull it together for 50 minutes and then you can go back and kind of mope for a little bit. But like for these 50 minutes, you know, these kids need you and you're going to pull it together. And then it's kind of like a fake it till you make it.
Exactly. Because,
you know, if you are even if you're pretending to be that way, by the end of that 50 minutes, I am that way. I'm never not thinking about the impact I have on my students. And that can be a lot of pressure, but I feel like I really thrive on that. And I feel like that's what really keeps me going in a way.
Yeah. It's like they need you to be strong for them and be positive and enthusiastic for them. But then ultimately that's helping you, because it's making you, even if it is hard at first, it's making you exude that positive energy, which will ultimately make you feel good because you're making them feel good. So it kind of flows back.
Exactly. It's like it's not very altruistic, because it's really benefiting me a lot, but it's one of those things where I'm like, it's sort of like when I design a really fun lesson, it's almost kind of selfish, because for me, I'm like, this is going to make me really excited about teaching class, and it's going to make me excited about being there. And if I'm excited, they're going to be excited. And then it's a great lesson, and then everybody wins. So I think it's just one of those things where, again, not altruistic, but it's good for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking the exact same thing. It's not just, okay, what's good for them? Because the reality is you need to be great and feeling great for the best possible outcome for them. And it's the same kind of thing, again, when people talk about parenting or any job or any relationship, like if you want to be your best partner to someone, then you need to take care of yourself and feel your best so you can do, you know, show up as your best self so that they can get, you know, that support from you. And I think it's kind of the same thing. And I like what you said about the fun lesson plans, because I know that's a big thing with you. I'm curious to hear, you talked a bit about diversifying your curriculum, changing it up a little. Also for your students, for example, bringing in more authors of color to help your students connect with what they're reading. And at the same time, just in general, you're teaching a lot of similar subjects or similar pieces again and again. So I do want to hear a bit about how you spice it up, some fun activities you've done in the past, or in general mindset, like, okay, you taught this lesson 3 years in a row, so next year, how are you going to get through it and be just as enthusiastic?
I feel like, and this is something that I always kind of get ribbed about because people are like, you're making your life so much harder. But I never, ever, well, it's so rare. I should say it's very rare that I'll teach the same lesson every year. Like, I always try to spice it up. I always try to say like, oh, this would be really fun to do. Or I did it this way last year. And again, I'm making my life harder for myself by constantly lesson planning. But like, for example, in AP Lit, I teach poetry. And students, this is not a surprise, they don't like poetry. It's boring for them. They're not really into it. And so I'm constantly trying to find ways to spice it up. And so this year I was like, well, I really need to focus a lot on imagery when it comes to poetry, visual imagery, auditory imagery, gustatory imagery, you know, olfactory, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, oh, you know, it'd be really fun. And again, selfishly, I was like, this would be really fun for me. I found like movie clips and I was like, here's a movie clip where we're going to look at like visuals as it relates to imagery. And then we're going to look at it and we're going to write down our thoughts on it. And then we're going to look at a poem that has to do with visual imagery. And we're going to talk about that. And here's one that relates to like auditory imagery. And, you know, here's a clip from Ratatouille where we talked about like the sensory imagery that was being used in there. And no surprise, like they love that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. you know, like they love, number one, it's just kind of fun to watch clips, but they really connect with it in a real way. And I find that I get the best responses when we do things like that. When we're watching, like, I showed them a clip from the movie 1917 and we looked at it and we talked about it. And then we looked at a poem that related to World War I. And then we talked about how that, what was the similarities, what were the differences. And they just come up with the most amazing stuff that you wouldn't get if you were just looking at the poem itself. Or like for my ninth graders, for example, again, I taught about characterization this year. That's not that exciting for them. I think it's exciting, but that's not that exciting. Mm-hmm. And this year I was like, you know, what would be fun for everyone involved is let's look at some songs from the movie Encanto and look at the way they use indirect characterization and direct characterization. And the students were not only singing along because they love the songs and it had just come out, so it was very topical and relevant, but I had kids who truly never really participated, who that day were like raising their hand and saying like, well, when she says the perfect golden child, that's really explicit direct characterization, and like coming up with things that they wouldn't have if we were just looking, let's say, at like a text. So
Pepper, mood effect, exactly.
Yep. And we listened to We Don't Talk About Bruno, and then the kids afterwards were like, play it again. So we played it again, and then they were all like singing along to it. And I was like, welcome to my nightmare. Now it can be stuck in your head too.
Well, now you're singing it around your house and at school.
Exactly. You can't escape Encanto.
No, you're meeting them where they are. You're meeting them where they are. You're putting things in different framework that might be easier for them to relate to. It livens it up. It's more exciting. And like you said, it's more exciting for you. And as we've discussed, your enthusiasm directly impacts their enthusiasm. So you're spicing it up for you. It's ultimately spicing it up for them.
Exactly.
It keeps you on your toes as well. I imagine that when you're looking at something for the millionth time, but if you look at it from a different angle, you're going to see something different in it as well. So can you just share a bit about a day in the life right now? You're no longer Zoom teaching, you're back to school. So tell us the average day of Sherry Horowitz, high school teacher, boss, Bia.
Extraordinaire. So, extraordinaire. Okay, here's my typical day on a weekday. This is going to sound crazy right from the start. I wake up at 4 and that's already.
I just choked on my water a little.
That's already insane because that's the middle of the night. Like it's so early, I wake up at 4, I exercise and then I shower. And then that gives me approximately an hour where I work. And I also kind of watch TV a little bit during that time. And I eat breakfast and I kind of get a lot of things done. Then at 6:30, I leave the house and I drive to school. I get to school at 6:45. And then from 6:45 to 7:45, I'm making copies, I'm grading, I'm lesson planning, I'm setting up my room, I'm checking in with this person, with this person. Then at 7:45, my students arrive. So I'm chatting with them, getting a few last minute things done. And then from 8 o'clock till 2:51, I am teaching. I teach 5 classes during that time. So these are 50-minute classes. I have one collaboration period where I'm meeting with other teachers. So it's like a meeting time. And then I have a planning where I get 50 minutes to myself where I'm like, again, grading, lesson planning, making copies, checking emails, doing those important things. And then at 2:51, school day is over. And then my other day begins, which is the mommy day, where I go like pick up my kids and then I'm with them until 8 o'clock at night. And then they go to sleep. And then I'll do a little bit of work. And then I go to sleep because I wake up at 4. So it's a very like, what's really interesting about it is like, when I say it out loud, it sounds really boring because it sounds really like the same every day and really regimented. But what's so interesting about teaching is that you can have the same schedule every day, but it's like a totally different day every single day. And even like totally different classes from class to class. So even though I might be teaching 3 English 9s, the lessons are going to go differently depending on the class that I have. So, and it feels like by the time I come home, I've interacted with hundreds of different people and had all these different experiences and all these different moments and like had a roller coaster of emotions. And then I, you know, and then I take care of my own kids and then I'm, you know, doing other things. So it feels like a really packed, full, variety filled day, even though it doesn't sound like it.
No, I get exactly what you're saying. And in this crazy day that you just described, can you identify one moment in a given day that you're just like, yes, everything rocks, I'm feeling good. And one moment in that day where you're just like, no, I can't. I hate everyone or I hate everything. In a given day, when, and it's not the 4 a.m. wake up, excluding the 4 a.m. wake up, that's not part of
it. That's never a time where I'm like, yes, I got this. typically, in the middle, like for me, it's so weird. When I say the middle of my day, I'm talking like 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning, which for people is like the beginning of their day. When you've been up since 4 and you start work so early, like that's like the middle. But typically that middle chunk of the day, my energy is high and I'm feeling good. And at that point, I've typically gotten through 2, maybe 3 classes. So in my mind, I'm like, oh yeah, from here, I just have this little bit of this and a little bit of that. And there's that. So typically the middle of my day is when I'm feeling pretty good. And then normally, unfortunately, that last class period right before it starts is normally when I'm like, oh man, like I gotta do this one more time. And it's typical. I mean, it's normally a repeat of a class I've already done. So I'm kind of like, okay. And then I'm thinking about all the things I need to do moving forward and what I need to do for the rest of the day. So that's typically like the toughest part, maybe. And every teacher will tell you this. Normally the last class of the day, and this is not supernatural, but it's normally the toughest class of the day because the kids are ready to go and you're ready to go. And I normally have 9th graders at the end of the day and they're a little squirrely.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense for sure. I don't understand how you have time to grade and lesson plan because like 90% of your time is spent actually teaching, but then I don't understand. When do you properly plan and do the grading and what the hell is going on?
Oh, I know. So it used to be before I had kids, and this isn't healthy. I don't recommend this for teachers in general, people in general, like I was working what felt like all the time. And it was a combination of like, I was a young teacher, I was a newer teacher and I didn't have kids. So I would wake up early, I'd work before school, I'd work after school. Like there was a time where I would arrive at school at let's say 6:30-ish in the morning and I would leave at like 6:30 at night. And then I would go home and then I would even do like more work. And that's crazy. And that's just way too much. And then when I started having kids, you are forced to not do that. You are forced to be more productive with your time, to work, as the kids would say, work smarter, not harder. And so I started realizing like, okay, I need to make life easier on myself. So there are little things. This is a little teacher trick of the trade that I would do that would make my life easier. So for example, I don't do tons and tons, but I do a lot of group work, and I put the kids in groups, and I'll say in the beginning of the lesson, I'll say like, okay, at the end of the class, I'm going to randomly choose one person from your group whose work I'm going to collect, and their work is going to count for everyone in the group. So it's going to have everyone's name on it. And I'm not going to tell you who it is until the end of the class. And so that makes everyone work the entire time because
wow,
they're like,
this is a sneaky little situation.
And then at the end of class, let's say you have a class of 35, instead of grading 35 worksheets, I'm grading 7, you know, something like that, which is obviously a lot less. And it's like, why would I be doing all that? They're doing the same thing. So everyone's doing the work and they're getting the same score, but it's less grading for me. And when I give an essay, I always, this does take some willpower to do and some, like, you have to be really regimented, but I always grade 10 essays a day. And so I'll be like, I will grade 3 before school. Oh no, actually I grade 6 before school. So I grade 3 in the morning before I leave for the day. I grade 3 before school starts. I grade 3 on my planning period. And then I find time to grade one more at some part during the day. And so if, let's say I have, you know, 60 essays to grade, it'll take me a week, give or take maybe a day or so. And so it's like just about figuring out, okay, what can I do that I'm still making sure that we're doing the same level of rigor, as we call it, but it's less work for me. And I started realizing over the years that like, I was doing a lot more work than I needed to do. And so when I started doing that, I started realizing like, oh, I'm still challenging myself and my students, but I'm not like working for 12 hours in the school building, which is crazy.
So I guess as time goes on, you learn more tricks of the trade, you know yourself more and your schedule, and when, you know, you're kind of figuring out some of these tricks that just make it more efficient for you to do your job and to do it well.
There's just one other quick thing. Again, if other teachers are listening, years ago, I started realizing like, oh, you know what? I don't need to grade everything. Like we can do stuff during class and then I don't collect it and it's not the end of the world. And they don't need points for everything. Or I can be like, hey, everyone, we're doing this. And we did. And at the end of the day, I'll be like, hey, if you did it, everyone gets 2 points just for doing it. And then I make a makeup assignment for kids who are absent. And then I have to grade those, but those aren't that much. And so it's like little things like that, that again, as you get older, you start realizing like, you don't have to like overwhelm yourself with work to make it feel like you're challenging your students.
How do you, and I understand you stay motivated because of, you know, this amazing feedback you're getting because you enjoy it, because you believe in what you're doing. But like we said earlier, there is a big problem in many places where teachers are underpaid. They're undervalued, yet we put them on a pedestal when it comes to kind of everything, except when it comes to making a stable, healthy living and having a healthy work-life balance. So with these frustrations in mind, conditions and things like that, and then going into Corona, where that was just a fiasco and so difficult with Zoom school and teaching from remote, how did you and do you keep going and still see the silver lining? And then what would you say to other people who are interested in being teachers, but maybe are turned off or discouraged by these conditions?
That's a great question, because in the last few years, there have been so many people leaving the profession because, as you said, especially these last few years, it has been really hard. Like it feels like teachers have been undervalued for a very long time, but especially over the last few years. In the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of like, oh, teachers are heroes, good for you teachers. But then it started to be like, you're selfish for not wanting to be back in the classroom, or you're not doing enough, or like, basically, you know, we need you to watch our kids, like treating us more like babysitters and acting like we're selfish for wanting to be safe and things like that. And there were a lot of people, I know I have a bunch of friends who left teaching in the last year or two because they were fed up with the pay, one of them, but like, it was more than that. It was more like being constantly told by society that like, you're not doing enough, or you're not good enough, or we don't care about teachers, that you're expendable, and et cetera. And it's really tough, because I was talking actually to one of my former students recently, and she's going into teaching, and she's been a little frustrated because she's trying to find a job. And I was like, don't be frustrated. You're going to find it, because our profession needs wonderful, motivated people like you. And I always say this, that it's both a good and bad thing, but if you are going to be a teacher, you have to love it. Because if you don't love it, it's going to be miserable for you, because being a teacher is so hard and it's such a big part of your life. But if you love it, you don't mind. You don't mind lesson planning. You're excited to do it. You're excited to do this for your kids. You're excited. I mean, I don't get excited about grading essays, I'll be honest about that. But I love lesson planning. I love teaching. I love like being around the students. And so if you're somebody who really feels like, I do love it, like it makes me so happy, you're gonna be happy despite the pay, despite what people say, despite like, you know, what society might say. It's gonna be hard. That's the way a lot of people think, that like teachers aren't smart, or they're, you know, people are teachers because they couldn't do something else. That's going to be there regardless. But if you really do love it, you're going to find a way to just kind of tune it out.
Is being a teacher who you are or what you do?
It's who you are. It really is. It's such a huge part of my identity, and you can't turn it off. And when I talk, I have to like stop myself from talking about it too much, because I could talk about it forever until I'm blue in the face, because I love it so much. And when I meet other teachers, this just happened recently, I met a retired teacher and we realized that we'd been talking about teaching for like 25 minutes. Again, like it's one of those jobs, I feel like kind of like maybe a nurse or something, that it's hard to turn it off, and it's a big part of who you are, and you don't feel like you're valued, but at the same time, if you really love it, you're just happy to be doing it.
And I feel like a teacher is, and a nurse, like you said, those are kind of examples where it really makes sense that you can't really separate what you do from who you are. And, you know, this is a topic that we talk about on the podcast a lot. Are we our work? You know, is this who I am, or is this what I do? Should I be equating my work with my worth? Is that who I am, a marketing biz dev person, or is that what I do? And I have to agree that with certain professions, it isn't just a profession. I don't want to be cheesy and be like, it's a way of life, but it is who you are, how you show up in the world, inside and outside of the classroom, how you think about things, how you see what's going on around you, and how you relate and interact with other people.
And I feel like you brought this up in the beginning, and it's so true that I would say, let's just make a blanket statement. Every single person in the world can tell you about one important teacher in their life. And I've seen this a kablillion times, when I say to someone like, well, tell me about like a teacher, or like they talk about, I'll meet a lot of people and they'll say like, oh, high school English. And a lot of people will say like, oh, I loved my high school English teacher, or I loved my high school this, or my middle school this. And they just light up when they talk about them. And you can tell that that person meant so much to them. Again, it seems selfish, but it's like, that's what I want my students to think about me. Like, I want them to be like, you know, not only do I remember what I learned, and I learned important things and whatever, but it's like, I mean, even if I have a student say like, you know, I don't really remember all the books and everything we read, but your class was so fun, then you're going to have someone who goes out there and is like, English is fun, and reading is fun, and writing is fun. And I have very positive memories. And I mean, I've had students who for sure did not enjoy high school, but they enjoyed my class. And so they have like one positive memory. And so it's one of those jobs that, you know, this is, as my students would say, no shade intended for any other job. But like, you know, you're not going to really have someone going out there and saying like, oh, I have my favorite lawyer that I met in my life. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's not the same thing.
I love it.
And so it's like, it's such a wonderful, wonderful job. And you know, people have been teaching for decades. Like, it's almost like they've got decades full of their own children. And it's just so special. It's hard to put into words. I hope I'm being clear.
I think you are. And I think, like, I'm envious of that feeling and knowing what you want and this is where you're supposed to be and it's impactful and you work hard, but this is what you're supposed to be doing and it means everything. And as much as I wish I could be someone who says like, oh, my job's just what I do and that's just where I am for 8, 9, whatever hours of the day, I am someone who would like to feel like how you feel about that. So you're a boss and I'm really happy you're sharing this. Okay. So really quickly, right now we're in the summer. So can you just quickly tell us what does summertime Sherry look like and how do you spend your summers when you're not teaching?
So summertime Sherry, very different than normal Sherry during the year. I don't wake up at 4. I mean, I'm still up early because now my body won't let me sleep in because as we discussed earlier, I'm old now. And I can't do it. And so, you know, I still wake up and exercise. I mean, after we're done talking, I'm about to go for like an hour long walk by myself where I just like listen to a podcast and just walk. And it's the most delightful thing in the entire world. And then, yes, I watch a lot of TV. Yes, I watch a lot of movies. I read a ton. You know, I'll like go out to lunch in the middle of the day with one of my friends. Like, it's just, I feel like I used to feel guilty about it. And now I don't feel any guilt at all because I pack like a whole year's worth and then some of stress and work and time and this into like 10 months. So it's like, I do think I deserve this like
yes.
time. And teachers everywhere will tell you that if you don't do it, you're gonna get burned out. And that's not helpful for anybody.
Totally. You need this recuperation period.
Yes. It's a recharging time.
You definitely need it. And I'm all for it. And summertime Sherry's great vibes all year round. Sherry's great vibes, but I'm happy for you when you're in the summertime mode. What would you say to someone who doesn't know what to do with their lives? What piece of advice would you give?
I would say, okay, I will tell you a little story that sort of leads into it. Many, many a year ago, someone you and
many
I-
moons.
Many moons. Ago, I always say my students, many moons ago, my boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband,
my brother,
wanted to go into medical school. And he wasn't really liking it. And he wasn't really enjoying the classes he was taking. And it felt like he should do it, you know, but it didn't feel like he was that interested in it. But what he loved was psychology. He loved psychology. His psychology classes, he loved to talk about it. He loved to study it. And one time, this is like early on in our relationship, he was like, I don't know about the med school thing. And I was like, why don't you major in psychology? And why don't you go into psychology? You love it. And he goes, well, it's really easy. And I was like, no, it's not easy. You love it. And that's why it's so easy. And it was like a light bulb went off in his head. And it made him realize, like, just because you love something and it's easy for you doesn't mean that it's bad. Like, you don't have to do a job that you don't enjoy because you think that, oh, I should be doing this career, or like, oh, this isn't a legit career because every day I'm having like the most fun I've ever had in my entire life. Like, there are truly days where I am teaching where I think to myself, like, this is not fair that I'm getting paid. I'm not getting paid tons, but like, you know, I'm getting paid to have this much fun. And so if somebody really isn't sure what they want to do, it's very simple, but it's like, what makes you happy? What do you love? Like, what is easy for you? You know? And it's like, can you turn that into a career? Even if people are going to be down on you about it or make you feel like, oh, well, that's not like challenging. Like, oh, like I'm doing, I mean, I can't tell you, people will sometimes say to me like, wow, teaching, it must be nice to teach a part-time job. And it's like, you have no idea how much work I do. You have no idea how hard I work. And you just think, and like, you know, someone will say to, I have a friend who's an elementary school teacher, and they'll be like, oh, you just like paint all day or like your finger painting and like, and it's like, you have no idea. And so even if people are going to be like really harsh about it or judgy, who cares? Who cares? They're not the one doing the job. So like, who cares?
Can
so
it.
Exactly. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, who cares what someone else has to say? So if you really aren't sure, I know it's really easy for me to say what it's like, what makes you happy and what's easy and fun for you? And can you turn that into some kind of career?
I love it. And you also gave a really nice teaser into an upcoming episode with your husband, my brother, psychologist, Dr. Adam Horwitz.
Exactly.
So that's going to be a fun one. Sherry, is there somewhere people can follow you to stay up to date on what you're up to? Are you an influencer? Do you want people to follow you or
listen?
We just
should I be an influencer? My students keep telling me that I should become TikTok famous, and I totally agree with them.
I could see that.
I could totally be TikTok famous. Do I have a TikTok? No, but I do have an Instagram where they can follow me. I think it's S Horwitz. Is that my Instagram name?
I think it is.
I think it is. Well, really, you can just see pictures of my kids and fun work that my students do. So I highly recommend following me. But I will say, yeah, it really is. And if anyone like ever wants to talk about teaching, feel free, reach out.
I'll connect you. I can happily make an intro email. Sherry, this was awesome. It was really fun talking to you. And there's a lot more that I wanted to cover and hash out. And I always have admired you and your passion for teaching. And I always wished that you could have been my teacher. I could have experienced you as a teacher because I'm jealous of those students. And so also as a student and also just as a working professional, I admire you and your hard work and your zest and spice. And thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you. This was so fun.
Hey, hey. So many great lessons, no pun intended, from the amazing Sherry. I love how she talked about making the lessons interesting and exciting for her in order to show up as an enthusiastic teacher for her students, how she incorporates her passions for movies, TV, pop culture, in her lessons, and to how she can really weave in her interests and the stuff she likes in her day-to-day work. And of course, the students love it as well. I think this is something that we can all kind of take with us in our careers, the sense of job crafting where we can loop in topics or tasks that we really enjoy and put them into our day-to-day jobs. Of course, I also love what Sherry says about her identity as a teacher. Often we talk about the question, is your job who you are or what you do? And it's clear that a profession like teaching is really who you are. It's core to Sherry, probably to most teachers, and it's really an essence. It's not something you can separate from your personal life. So I really hope you enjoyed the episode. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to What Should I Do With My Life? And be on the lookout for more episodes coming your way. Bye.